Hey, you guys think we should do a political podcast sometime? I think that... Never mind. I think it'd be just a bunch of Tim Matson cursing.
You're not f***ing kidding me. I gotta say.
Now, come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up, y'all.
N-E-R-D
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson.
Nerd Up!
All right, it's time for another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. This is Nerd Up Podcast 101. That means it's like the first class you would take when before...
It's a how-to class.
Before you specialize in the Nerd Up... Oh, wait, no, actually, it's just episode number 101. But anyway, Guilty Wilson here with you, along with...
Isaac Wilson.
And we're here to talk about a whole bunch of fun stuff. We recently attended, well, kind of more than recently, but we attended the Indiana Toy and Comic Expo. We got to talk to some artists and some creators, and we're going to be presenting some of those interviews this time around, promoting some of these talented guys. And also, we're going to intermingle everything with some movie reviews that Isaac and I have been on a what would you call it, a whirlwind tour of movies, at least for a little while. Got some last-minute movies in, a mixture of animation, horror, indie film, and it's just some weird stuff, too. So we'll talk about those. In fact, let's go ahead and get a rundown of some of the movies we're going to talk about during this podcast. We'll talk about Kubo, The Two Strings. Kubo and the Two Strings. There we go. And we'll talk about that movie, and then we'll also talk about Don't Breathe, which is a kind of a thriller. Some people said it was a horror movie, but it's more of a thriller, psychological thriller. It was really pretty good, I thought. And then we'll talk about Sausage Party, which was just kind of a barrel of weirdness. What's your consistent in general in that one?
I thought it was hilarious, but I left the weirdness part for you to enjoy on your own.
Well, it was weird throughout, but there was, yeah, that one moment. And then we're also going to talk about Swiss Army Man, another one that's kind of a weirdness, but... Ah, wow, it's surprisingly deep, but at the same time, it was whenever they'd start to get real deep, then they'd start to make fun of themselves, so to speak, and pull back, not even pull back, but just show that, hey, it's just a freaking movie. Those are the movies we'll talk about, and also some of the artists we're going to be talking with. We're going to talk with Mitchell Caver. He's one of the artists we saw. He's got this line of prints that he created mainly because his daughter wanted to see Wolverine and Ariel together in action. And so he created these prints, which are a combination of Marvel heroes and Disney princesses that are just fun. I talked to Gavin Smith, a friend of the podcast, because we've talked to him a couple times before. We talked to him the first time was at Indie PopCon. He's the artist for the comic book series The Accelerators. Blue Juice Comics are the ones that create that, and it's about time travel. Really cool. We'll talk more about that. We're going to talk with Mike Flynn with Punch It Graphics. He creates these movie and travel posters based on nerdness. And really neat stuff that he creates. We'll talk with Jake Lee, a guy that does some silkscreen printing artwork that's just so cool to look at. Then we're going to talk with Ron Brown, a man that has created a Platypus comic book series that a couple years ago, Tim Matson saw him at Indie PopCon and told me it's like one of the most charming comic books he's read. And we were going to go talk to the guy, but when we got all tied up, that was our first Indie PopCon, actually the first Indie PopCon. And we got sidetracked with just about everything going on there, so we never did get to go back. I'm glad I did this year at the Indiana Toy and Comic Expo and got to talk to Ron Brown about some of his creation. So we'll talk about that, and then we'll close everything out. So first, Isaac, let's talk about Kubo and the Two Strings. You started out.
Oh, geez, put the friggin' pressure on me, why don't you? Throw me under the bus, whatever that phrase is. It was a pretty good movie. The animation was original and quite nice to look at. And we didn't really see it in 3D, did we?
But, no, we kind of wanted to.
Yeah, it probably would have been great in 3D, but it was just a nice story. I'll let you explain all the story because that's what you're best at. But it was a great story. Introduced, like, I'm sure most of the people who went there didn't even know what a shamisen was. That's the instrument that he played that only had two strings.
So I thought shamisen was a character in a video game, but
that's the instrument that you'd hear in like all the old kung fu movies, like the di-da-doo.
Yep.
And he had these magical powers because of it. Did they explain that? Was it because of that, or was it because of his mom?
It's because of his mom. The powers came from his mom. Was, you know, the daughter of the Moon King.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a legendary witch type thing, I guess you'd say his mom was.
So he put his magic into the shamisen and created little origami stories out of it.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
But overall, I thought it was a really good movie, and it's refreshingly original.
You know, okay, let's give a little rundown. Like you said, the story is a Kubo, who has this magical powers that through his shamisen and origami, and the powers given by his mom, combined to make, and he's basically a storyteller in the beginning of the movie, and that's all it is. And his mom is like, you can tell something's wrong, she's just mentally not quite there. And so he goes down and kind of earns money telling stories on the streets, and he has to always be back before it's dark. And so it's like, you see something's going on, but the magic storytelling, that's the thing that got me at first. It was like, well, wait a minute, if he's a magic storyteller, are any of these people not noticing there's magic going on? And then you come to find out it's kind of a known thing about him later on that, oh, okay, yeah, that's what he does. But yeah, he make origami come to life. And it's not just normal origami. You don't just see the swans and the whatever, but you see actually figures and fighters, and they battle each other. Really cool. But the movie stars, start out with the monkey. Well, yeah, that's one thing. Once the problems start happening, he's got these guides that are guiding him to safety and to keep him hidden. The first guide is the monkey. And should we give spoilers?
I'd say, like, not major spoilers, but the monkey is, his mom gives him a little, like, guardian figure, basically.
A token?
Yeah. And, if you've seen the trailers, it's kind of obvious to tell, like, that his mother kind of sends him with the monkey, and then the monkey becomes real.
Uh-huh.
So I don't want us to spoil anything.
Okay, all right. Well, nothing past that. So the monkey was sent by his mother, and becomes a real life. It starts out just a little carving, and then it comes to life. But the monkey is played by Charlize Theron. You may remember her most recently from Mad Max Fury Road. She was the lead female in that movie. But she does the voice for the monkey. And, it really that's a major part of the storyline. We just can't give that away. Art Parkinson, he played Kubo. Now, some people may know him from Game of Thrones. He's Rickon Stark, and he's in the Game of Thrones TV series, or was. I don't know. Did he die yet? I don't remember. Everybody dies eventually in Game of Thrones. So, but anyway, he plays Kubo. Ralph Fiennes plays the Moon King, who's like the main evil villain who... I don't think this one's a spoiler, but it turns out to be that's Kubo's grandfather.
Yeah, that's explained pretty early on in the story.
So Ralph Fiennes plays him, does a great job, and the Moon King, his grandfather, that's where all the powers come from.
Matthew McConaughey plays the beetle soldier that Kubo, like, learns more about his dad that way. Didn't he say he was, like, one of his... He lost his memory, but he worked for Kubo's dad or something like that?
Yeah, that's the way he puts it, yeah. Well, here's the thing. I don't go into movies and do a lot of research before the movie. I'm not a paid critic, so I don't have to do that. So I go into a movie to be completely surprised, and I go into a movie, you know, completely open-minded. Now, this one, I went in there, the only thing I knew from it was the trailer, and they had the song, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, playing in the trailer, but kind of a Asian-influenced version of the song. But anyway, as I'm watching the movie, I'm sitting there, I know that voice of that Beatle. Who is that? And Isaac goes, it's Matthew McConaughey. And I'm like, oh yeah. So it was really a unique sound, and it just really stands out. He does a great job as the Beetle. Some other voices that appear in it, which
are
George Takei. I loved it. In fact, he has his line, "Oh my," and it's like as soon as he says that, you know, hey, that's George Takei, and he has a couple other few lines in there. And then Brenda Vaccaro, she plays the old lady on the. That's helping Kubo out, telling his stories. But basically, the village is attacked. Kubo has to make it on his own, and with the help of a beetle and a monkey. And great storytelling, beautiful story of family. There's a story of honor. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff mixed into this movie. And I got to tell you, Isaac, in the movie, I leaned over to you and said, I'm not sure if I'm fond of this animation. And he goes, what do you mean? I mean, you gave me this look like, get the hell out of my theater. What do you mean? And then I realized why I didn't like it. And it wasn't the fact that I didn't like it. See, I thought it was animated. I didn't realize it was puppeted. You know, 3D rendered puppets that were made from a 3D printer. And I'm like, I don't do research into these movies. I just go in and watch them. And that's what it was. It's like, well, the mouths weren't moving quite right. Or something wasn't moving quite. And then I realized it's all done with stop motion puppets. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. this is genius. So after I got to that point, then it was. It turned out to be beautiful, and that was along the lines as you. But I remember telling you, I'm not sure if I'm fond of this animation, because if it were computer graphic animation, it was very, well, jumpy at parts.
Well, even if it was computer graphic animation, I don't think there's really been a CGI movie like this.
No.
That you could, like, base anything. The closest you'd get is, like, Wallace and Gromit type movies with the claymation.
Yeah.
But other even well, with
Box
those,
Trolls a couple years ago.
That was still claymation, though. Like, this yeah. movie looks like it wouldn't have been...
Well,
like, if it was CGI, it wouldn't have been claymation-inspired CGI.
Right, right. But yeah, I mean, it was at first it was... I was like, wait a minute, that's pretty cheap. But then I realized, no, it's not cheap. It's 3D rendering, 3D printed puppets that it's just amazing. And when they, at the end of it, again, just like they did in the Box Trolls, they show the stop motion photography yeah. as it happens. And you could say, wow, that's ingenious the way they do that. So yeah,
the giant skeleton monster that's in the trailers.
Yeah, like, which is just funny. I mean, that's the one thing about this movie, too. It's got great storyline. It's got great... adventure, if you will, but it also has some hilarious moments. There's some moments that are just so funny.
It's also got a great original soundtrack.
Yeah,
like even the While My Guitar Gently Weeps, that's an original cover, like,
yeah,
with not just guitars,
right? Yeah. And with a Sheamusson.
Yeah.
And once again, the best part about the movie, you learn what a Sheamusson is. So, but yeah, that was Kubo and the Two Strings. All in all, I will say it's a really good movie. It's fun. It had everything that you want in a movie. Good family movie. I mean, I would have gone to it by myself, but I don't like to go to movies by myself. But I'm just saying that as an adult, I would have enjoyed it. Isaac?
I gotta say, it was really pushing the border of PG. Like, I'm surprised it wasn't PG-13.
Really?
Yeah, because there was... Not only was there, like, death moments and really creepy, like...
Yeah.
The sisters, those were really creepy. But yeah. Also... one part that distinctly stuck out to me, I was like, I have to check the rating on this, was, it's in the location sense, but at some point he's like, I think, if you won't join me up here in the stars, then maybe I'll just have to send you straight to hell.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It did kind of border on that. But
even though it was PG, it was still really action-packed.
Yeah, and definitely so. I mean, and plus it was fun to, when he started doing the magic with the origami,
yeah,
and the various things that he would do, like, well, even with leaves, not just origami, he created a boat out of leaves.
Yeah.
It was just neat to watch that come together and how they created that picture. So what would you say, you would have gone to see it by yourself?
I would have gone to see it multiple times if I had the chance.
Okay, we'll see. So it's a very good movie. Fun. All right, well, that's it for Kubo and the Two Strings. That's the first movie of the day. Let's get on to our first interview. We're going to start out talking with Mitchell Caver. Mitchell has created some mashups that just grabbed our attention there at the Indiana Toy and Comic Expo, and great Marvel Disney mashups. We'll talk about those. Mitchell Caver, you can check out his website, mitchellcaver.com. So let's talk with him and come back and talk about a thriller. Guilty Wilson once again with the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm here at the Indiana Toy and Comic Expo in Bloomington, Indiana. I'm speaking with artist Mitchell Caver. Mitchell has got a unique, first of all, what grabbed my attention, I have to tell you, is a mashup, if you will, of Marvel and, well, you've got the princesses from Disney. Like, one of them I'm looking at right now in front of me is Beauty and the Beast. The Beast being from X-Men and Beauty. That's a beautiful idea. First of all, let's talk to Mitchell real quick. Mitchell, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing awesome. I have 32 ounces of coffee and it's keeping me awesome.
That's always a good thing. Now, we talked about your mashup here. That's the thing that grabbed my attention most was the mashup. You came up with the idea how?
So, I came up with the idea, and I put big quotes around that, because my daughter, she was three, she's six now, but when she was three, she says, Daddy, you never draw me anything. And I said, fair, I just drew you Rapunzel and Ariel yesterday, literally. And she says, but I want Wolverine and Ariel together.
Nice.
So I drew Wolverine and Ariel together, and while I was drawing it, I thought of some of the other ideas, like a Beauty and Beast, if Wolverine's with Ariel,
right.
Beast with Belle,
right.
I thought was really cool. So that's really how it got started.
Nice. Now, some of the other artwork you have, you've got Snowcap.
Snow White, Captain America.
Yeah, and then you have, Hawkmere?
Hawkmare. It's Merida from Brave and Hawkeye. They love bow and arrows. My favorite...
That makes sense.
I like Spider-Man, and I put him with Rapunzel, because they're both swingers, clearly.
I didn't see that one. Uh-oh. I'm going to look for that one.
That one's up front. That one's one of my favorites, too.
Nice. Well, no, a couple years ago, I met Philo Barnhart, you know, the guy that created the Ariel for the Little Mermaid. Well, he's got a print that he's selling. He signed one for me, but it's now that all the Disney princesses are together and Star Wars is part of that, he did one with Princess Leia coming in with Blaster. And all the other princesses are having a dinner party. She goes, oh, great, she brought the gun again. So it's one of the coolest matchups I've seen.
That
but now,
is the best. I love it.
And now that I've seen your work, I'm like, no, I'm thinking Philo's going to have to step back a little because these are just not only clever, but the artwork themselves. That's one thing. The way you blend the styles in, you keep with the Disney look on the princesses for sure, but the Marvel guys, they almost become Disney-esque. What's your process on that?
Well, so basically what I'll do is I'll sketch the Disney characters from a reference so I can really nail the Disney look. And then when I draw the Marvel heroes, I've been drawing them for so long that I really can play with their stylized look. So their hand size, their proportions, and things like that. So I kind of tailor fit my superheroes to the Disney realm so that you get a superhero that still looks like a Marvel hero, but kind of the Disney vibe, so it gives it a nice blended look, like they're really meeting each other.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's beautiful stuff, and I mean, you got other artwork that you do as well, and it's just as good as anything else, but the blending of those styles are the ones that immediately grab me to your table.
Thank you.
And like I said, you do other stuff. I mean, you got some Dragon Ball Z, you got some Turtles, you've got some just original stuff that you've done, but this one right here just like just grabbed my eye immediately, so I have to commend you on that one.
Thank you.
And you got to thank your daughter for having you come up with the idea.
I thank her every day with Shopkins. Lots of Shopkins.
Okay.
Weird thing. They're just little statues. They don't move. They're not posable. They are literally about a half inch big, and we play having cutie contests. Don't ask what a cutie contest is.
Hey, sometimes it's great having a kid.
Yep.
It's nice. Well, let me ask you, we have to get the word out about how people can find and take a look at some of your artwork, because here on the podcast, they're hearing about it. This is a visual thing. How can people take a look at your artwork?
Check me out online. If you're an Instagrammer, it's MoesArt812. Mo is MoesArt812. And then I'm everywhere else on the web as Mitchell Caver. So Mitchell Caver. Caver, like being in a cave with an R, or a spelunker. So you have MitchellCaver.com and Mitchell Caver on Facebook. So find me.
Definitely so. I mean, you guys will definitely make it worth your while. Just take a look at some of the artwork. Beautiful stuff. And it's just fun. I mean, the princesses and the Marvel characters, that's just absolute fun. Any father-daughter team would be proud to have those.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, well, thanks again, Mitchell Caver. Check out his website. Go to his Facebook page, and I'll be putting a link on the Nerd Up podcast page so you can also go check that out. So thanks,
awesome.
Mitchell.
Thank you.
All right, so that was Mitchell Caver, MitchellCaver.com, or you can check him out on Facebook. Out of those Disney Marvel mashups, did you have any other that were one of your favorites out of that one?
I really liked the Beauty and Beast one.
That was very catchy. And it's like, well, that's obvious. Awesome. Who didn't think of that before, you know? Or why didn't anybody think of that before? Yeah, that one. I did like the Rapunzel Spider-Man because they're both swingers. You know, she was swinging on her hair and he was on the web. That was kind of a neat one. I'd like to see what he could do with Deadpool, though. That would be neat. But anyway, Mitchell Caver. So now let's talk about another movie we saw. This one, billed as a horror movie, but it's actually more of a thriller. I consider a horror movie if there's something supernatural or monsters or, you know, there's lots of blood.
You're telling me that this Daredevil veteran wasn't as supernatural?
Oh, man. There were times it seemed like he did have some supernatural powers.
Are we getting a crossover of this veteran and Daredevil?
I know, right? Well, let's talk about it. Basically, the movie is Don't Breathe. It stars, we'll start out with the kid star, Dylan Minnette, or Minnette, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name, but he was in the Goosebumps movie with Jack Black. Mm-hmm. He was also in the TV series Awake, which was short-lived, and I wish they would have stuck with that, about the guy that when he was awake, it was one life, and when he was asleep, he's another. Both, and he played the son of this man that was awake and asleep, and a very interesting TV series. But anyway, very interesting actor. Very quiet actor. He always has, every time they put him in anything I've ever seen him in, he's always like very contemplative. It's like all his acting is going on his face,
but it looks like it's all going on in his head, but he brings it out, and it's very interesting character, very interesting face too, as a matter of fact. But anyway, so Dylan Minnette. It also starred the veteran, the supernatural veteran, Stephen Lang. Most people know him best from Avatar. He was Colonel Miles. What was his last name? Quaritch, I think, is his last name. So anyway, he was that. And then it's been a while since I've seen Avatar, but anyway, they got like 4 sequels coming up, so we'll see those. He was also Into the Badlands. He played the paralyzed kung fu trainer guy that was in a wheelchair in the Badlands TV, or Into the Badlands TV series, which is a good series. It's on AMC. And also, he was in another short live TV series called Terra Nova, which I thought was really cool. Basically, the Earth is going to crap, and so they're sending people into the past, back into, you know, dinosaur days. And people were living, and he was like the leader of this commune where people were living in the past, and they're trying to make it a better world so that people could actually live. But anyways, weird TV series, but I loved it. But anyway, Stephen Lang, total badass. I mean, especially in this movie. He's the one, he's also, for a while there, whenever they announced that Cable was going to be in the next Deadpool movie, he wanted to be Cable.
I can see that.
And yeah, definitely so after seeing this movie, too. So anyway, so he was on there. Jane Levy, she'll be in the new Twin Peaks TV series for people that are fans of the Twin Peaks. But she was also in the reboot of the movie Evil Dead. And one of the reasons I bring that up is the fact that the director, Fede Alvarez, he was the director of that Evil Dead reboot. And so now I see why he cast her, because, hey, he's worked with her before. But anyway, so Don't Breathe. All right, let me give you a little synopsis of what the movie is about. Basically, these three hoodlums in Detroit, one of the guys, Dylan Minnette's dad, he has a security company, or works for a security company. And the security company takes care of rich folks' houses. And so Dylan has his access to the keys to all these rich people's houses. And he has the access to their security system. So him and his two hoodlums, they go to these houses and they steal stuff, never money. And they never bring a weapon. They kind of try to, you know, because they don't want to get too much jail time if they ever get caught. Anyway, and using all that information, they get all the things and they fence all the items they steal. And then they return the keys. Nobody's the wiser. Oh, and they always set the alarm off after they leave. So that way the cops will show up, but the timeline will never match when they're there. So it's kind of ingenious thinking. But this is in Detroit, and everybody knows Detroit is a failing city right now. There's lots of problems in the whole state of Michigan. So one of the people, Jane Levy, I think her character's name, Rocky, that's her character's name, she's wanting to get out of town, wanting to go to California. So they need one last big score.
So really the only one that doesn't have I guess both of the guys don't really have a motive, but...
Right.
The guy that Dylan plays is he's basically trying to like get out of the friend zone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the other did we know the actor's name of Money or something like that?
Yeah, that's his name. The character's name was Money. I can't remember the actor.
Anyway, he's you wouldn't like him. Nobody likes him.
Yeah.
He has no real reason other than he's a thug to rob these people.
And spoiler, you're happy when he dies.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's also the boyfriend to Rocky, so that's Dylan's got to get him out of the way anyway. So she's wanting to get out of town. So this one last big score, they discover that this old man, he's a veteran, and his daughter was killed by a drunk driver. Well, the drunk driver was a well-to-do teenage girl. Her parents were rich, so she got off scot-free. And so as part of that, There was a suit, and they settled out of court, and he got like a big, huge amount of money, in cash, as a matter of fact. And so everybody knows this, and so they know, looking at his house and everything, that he never spent that money. The rumors is flying that he's got it hidden somewhere in his house. So their job is to steal that, because hey, what happens? His security is with the same company Dylan's dad works for. I can't remember. Oh, I wish I remembered Dylan's character's name. Anyway, it's the one his dad works for. So they get access. They're scoping out the place. They find out he's a blind veteran. It's like, oh, this is going to be easy. All right, this is where it starts to bug me here. Now, at this point, they go to break in and they're going to steal it. And this is where the fun begins. First of all, during the break-in process, They were the loudest people. I mean, I know a few blind people, all right? And it's not that they have enhanced senses, like Daredevil. It's just that they've learned to use their other senses in lieu of one missing, okay? So, they're
what you're saying is they have enhanced senses.
No, they're not enhanced. They just know how to use them. But these guys are so loud breaking into this building. I mean, come on. You and I both said so in the middle of the theater. It's like, they're just stupid. I think there was a time you stood up frustrated and just kind of waved your hand like, what? So luckily we were the only ones in the theater too. But they were clanging bars. I mean, there's bars on all the windows. There's one point where the guy's taking a crowbar and trying to hammer the bars loose. I'm like,
there's the part where the like basement, the doors to the basement. Like, what are those called? Like, there are plenty
basement
of
doors.
Okay, well, there are
storm
plenty
cellar doors.
Yeah, those. Friggin' plenty of shows have them. I just don't know the name of them. Anyway, so like, it's locked, and he can see it's locked because he like sees the lock through a little hole right at the edge of the door. He rattles it anyway,
yeah.
Just to make, you know, just let's make sure that lock is working.
It's like, good Lord, man. And so you're like, okay, they know, okay, so they're making a lot of noise.
Not only is it an old blind guy, but they also just now got a dog to sleep, the guard dog to sleep.
Yeah. Which they, you know, drug to the piece of meat, and that's what, yeah, that's another thing. There's a dog involved, a very vicious Rottweiler. And anyway, yeah, so, okay, so there's that. That bugs me. Well, once they break into the house, they got to find this money. They can't find it anywhere. I mean, the guy's house is just a regular house, and you don't know it. And so they find the house, and at one point, the stupid guy, Money, goes upstairs, and he's trying to find where the money is hidden. Money's trying to find the money. And it ends up he wakes up the veteran Stephen Lang. Okay. So, basically, I think he's just billed as on credits as the old man.
Yeah, I don't think he is a, like, what you just said about how he wakes up the veteran, I don't think he was asleep. I think, like, he probably woke up from all that noise earlier,
mm-hmm.
but, like, he was probably pretending to be asleep.
You might be right.
Looking back on it. He did just get up and, like, I know this was for suspense in the movie, but whenever he was up out of the bed, all he did was turn off the TV that was playing, like, the home videos or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was for suspense purposes only.
You might be right, looking at that. So, yeah, yeah. So then they're still trying to find the money. They regroup. One kid says, look, I'm out. We can't find the money. I'm done. Well, Dylan, he does. He leaves. So he's leaving. And, when they came into the house, they took off their shoes at the back door so they could be quieter. That bugged me, too. It's like, what? After all that clanging, you just took off your shoes to be quieter? That's stupid. So, anyway.
Well, also, whenever they regroup, like, is his name Lucas in the movie or whatever?
Might be. Dylan?
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, it might be.
This is why I don't hate him and hate Money, is because he's the only one with a moral compass, and he's like, yeah, I can't do this. This guy's blind. Let's not do this.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't really need all this money. We can go rob some people that aren't blind.
Yeah, yeah. And so, so he leaves, and then the old man comes, and everybody freezes. The idea, don't breathe, because if you breathe, the guy's going to hear you. And he's sitting there, he's listening down this darkened hallway, and he comes to find out, he discovers Money, and says, who all's with you? He goes, I'm by myself. And so he shoots the kid. So there you go, he's dead. Then the horror begins. And let me tell you, basically, Dylan Lucas, I think is his name. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he comes back in, tries to get the girl. She discovers where the money is, because after he shoots the kid, the old man goes and looks in his safe where he keeps the money to make sure that they didn't get anything. And it's still there, and he closes it. Well, she sees the keypads that he presses so they can get into the safe. She sees that when Dylan, the actor Dylan, Lucas, we'll go with Lucas. When he comes back in, she says, hold on. She opens the safe and gets the money. Right about that time, the old man is in the kitchen. He's trying to clean up after the body and everything, get rid of the kid's body. And anyway, he's in the kitchen, and he discovers there are two pair of shoes in there. So that means there's two people in the house. So he comes back, and that's where the fun begins. But there's a twist to the story, and it has to do with, should we give spoilers?
You mean about the basement?
Yes.
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
I've just got to explain that if this next part, it'll kind of be self-explanatory as to why, but if you saw The Gift, it's something that, it's a movie that you'd enjoy. Mm. If you enjoyed The Gift, I guess, too.
Mm. Okay. Well, basically what happens, they get there and they're going to escape through the basement of the house. And he's tracking them down, and they go through the basement, they get to the storm cellar door, the way they're going to go out, because it's locked from the inside. And when they get down to the basement, remember, the old man's daughter was killed by a drunk driver. The drunk driver got off free, he got a cash settlement. Just so happens, the girl that was the drunk driver, he's got chained up in her basement.
In her basement?
Or, I mean, his basement. Yeah. And then,
He has this little mechanism that, like, has the bell up there.
Yes.
Like, there's a bell upstairs, and she's attached to a rope that if she would jump forward, then the bell would ring.
And he knows.
Yeah.
And that's what gives him, so he goes down to the basement.
That's the part that bothers me, though. If she, you'd assume she would have figured out by now that the bell, like, attracts him or something like that, because, like, it, to be alerted that she needs food or something while she's down there, you know, she'd have to ring that. So why would she jump after two people that could possibly get her out?
Well, because, like, why not possibly just, like, get her out?
Why not just, like, clap or something like that and make noise?
I don't know.
there are so many other things. If you're tied up, are you really going to try jumping after somebody when you know you're tied up?
Yeah, good point. Maybe. Well, so they try to get her free. Rocky, she says, we're not leaving without her. So then they go to make their escape, and that's where it even begins even more so. It's a big hunt. The old man shuts down the power in the house, so now they're all on the same level. Nobody can see, and it becomes one of those infrared image viewing scary movies for a while. And then, oh my gosh, it's just crazy. There's still even more twists and turns as it goes through in the plot and in the storyline. And it was, I'll tell you what, we saw Kubo pretty much the night before that one, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Kubo is about 2 hours long. And this one is an hour and a half long. We came out of that theater and I thought, I mean, we'd been in there for hours. I mean, it's constantly, you know, oh, they're going to get out. Oh, no, they got caught. Oh, they're going to get out. Oh, they got caught. Constantly that kind of tension going on. I walked out of that theater, and we were out 15 minutes earlier than the previous movie. And we got home, I should say, 15 minutes earlier than the Kubo. And I thought for sure we were in there way longer. Because it just, the way the time dragged, or not dragged, but the tension kept you thinking it was just going on forever.
Yeah.
And wow, it's only an hour and a half movie, but at the same time, you felt like you're longer because you're under a lot. I mean, you're constantly on the edge of your seat. There's tension, and it's pretty scary, or at times. But everybody lives happily ever after, except for the two people that die, or three people that die. All right. Well, that's Don't Breathe. Next, we're going to talk to a friend of the podcast, Gavin Smith. Gavin Smith, you can catch him on gavinsmithcomics.com, or he's doing the Accelerators comic book. You can find out more about the Accelerators comic book at bluejuicecomics.com. Let's talk to Gavin Smith and come back talking about Sausage Party. Guilty Wilson with the Nerd Up Podcast here at the Indiana Toy and Comic Expo, getting ready to talk with Gavin Smith. You may remember we talked to him a couple years ago at the Indiana at the Indie PopCon. Looks like we got the crowds happy here.
That was me crying.
that was definitely Gavin. He's excited to be on here. Anyway, Gavin is the artist for the Accelerators comic and also a few other things. We'll talk about some of that. Gavin Smith, welcome to the Nerd Up Podcast once again.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, now, once again, last time we talked, you were doing the Accelerators. You had the trade paperback of Volume 1 Accelerators. Now it looks like you got Volume 2, and you're saying probably by the end of the year you'll have Volume 3?
Yeah, we'll definitely have Volume 3. I have finished inking Issue 15, which rounds up this arc for Volume 3. Issue 14 comes out next week. Issue 15 comes out the end of September, and we should have the trade for New York Comic Con.
Nice. So anybody heading to New York Comic Con, check it out. You'll be able to get an advanced copy before me even. That's not right.
Well, yeah, we usually tend to make it our goal to put out a trade paperback by New York Comic Con, or at least have it ready, because then we solicit it through Diamond, I think, in October, and then it'll be in bookstands by December, usually. I'm not totally sure when this year it's coming out, but The other news is we actually got distribution. I found out. I don't know if I'm supposed to say it or not, but I don't know. I don't care. We're going to be in Barnes and Nobles and Books a Million and stuff like
wow,
that
nice.
Too, which is pretty
that's,
great.
That's a good step. I mean,
yeah.
really, for anybody.
That's exciting.
Well, I'm just happy you guys got trade paperbacks out. So.
Me too.
Now you're working on. I see a couple other comics up here for you.
Yeah.
What else is going on with your system here?
Well, I did a cover for Vamp Blade for Action Lab Entertainment. That was a C2E2 exclusive this year. I did this prequel comic called Charge that was for a movie called All Superheroes Must Die.
Oh,
I just did a 9-page story, which is this stuff right here, for Image Comics for a book called 68 that's coming out sometime this year. It's supposed to be part of the 10-year anniversary issue. The creator of the series, Mark Kidwell, was kind enough to have me and my buddy Chris Charlton, who wrote the story for this one. We collaborated on that together. It's going to be colored by Jay Photos, I believe, and it's going to come out sometime soon. I'm not totally sure when.
And that's a 68, you said?
Yeah, 68, the 10-year anniversary special.
So it sounds to me like you're busy.
I'm very busy. In between that, like I said, I just finished up issue 15 of Accelerators, so I've got a little break before we jump into the next arc. So I'm working on a pitch with Mark Kidwell and our friend James Maddox.
That's how I discovered you, was the Accelerators comic book. I just loved the storyline and everything going behind it. And of course, the artwork, of course. I mean, you're standing in front of me, so I got to say that.
Right.
But anyway, now you guys, you said you're up to 15 right now.
Yeah.
How far are you guys going to go with Accelerators?
25 issues.
Is that a definite, or you may go?
That's for sure.
Okay.
We found out after volume one, I was like, there's no way this is going past 10 issues. Then we got to issue 10. And it wasn't wrapped up, and we kind of had a meeting, actually in between, right before we got to issue 10. I had the scripts up to issue 10, but we kind of had a meeting at New York Comic Con, and we kind of confirmed that we're going, we definitely confirmed that we're going to issue 25, and which will put us at 5 volumes and a complete story. Ronnie Porto, RFI Porto, for those that follow the book, gave us an entire story outline for what's going to happen, and it's such a cool ending, like where we start from where we end 25 issues later. Reading the last issue's outline,
right.
It kind of gave me that gut punch feeling
that you
kind of get from like a series ends, did you ever watch 6 Feet Under?
Yes.
Did you ever watch those last 6 minutes of 6 Feet Under?
Yeah.
It kind of felt like that to me.
Oh my God.
It's really cool.
So it's a good gut punch then,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, I mean, it's that good gut punch that like leaves you feel like that, like that's all you need. Like you don't want any more. Like it's not that you don't want it. You feel
right,
satisfied
right.
reading that.
And that's always good. When you got a story and you've got a satisfying ending, everything's good. So,
yeah.
All right. So, well, 25 issues. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to catch it every con we can. I'm going to keep up to date with you.
Sounds good.
And every time you get a trade paperback, I'll be having that one.
That sounds great. Yeah.
So,
I love to hear what you think of volume two. Volume three is chugging along real strong. And the end of volume two leads directly into volume three. And, like, there's... we introduce new villains, new storylines. Like,
nice.
Now it's they get further and further away from the time games area and just.
Okay.
I wish I could spoil it.
I know. I don't want you to. I appreciate you stopping there.
It's so much fun, and I'm having a ton of fun drawing it. And they're letting me kind of go crazy creating characters and stuff for it. Like this skull guy is like.
How can people see artwork and this online? That's what I got to tell people. You got to look at this. This is a cool looking character.
You can follow me on Instagram at Gavin P. Smith, or you can follow Blue Juice Comics or the Accelerators on Facebook. Go to bluejuicecomics.com, gavinsmithcomics.com.
You got to see this. This is cool. Skull with, I'm guessing, some sort of feeder tanks, but don't spoil it because. Oh, nice.
It's funny because like this guy started out as a throwaway character in volume two, and then like he was like supposed to be a time criminal in the background of this prison, and Ronnie was like, yeah, let's use that guy. We're making him a thing.
And, nice.
And like he's become my favorite character to draw.
Well, I'll tell you, those time games and that I've really enjoyed those. That's just somebody's thinking when they wrote up the idea, and the artwork you're doing on it just really makes this thing pop. This comic book is a big surprise to anybody. Trust me. You'll love it. So, all right. Well, Gavin P. Smith, thank you very much for joining us again.
Hey, my pleasure.
And we'll see what happens next.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. So that was Gavin Smith, or Gavin P. Smith, if you're looking for him. For some reason, there's another Gavin Smith out there, so you want to make sure you got the right one.
Make sure you don't send your mail to the wrong address.
That's right.
Like, make sure the post office doesn't get your mail mixed up to somebody else's. Like that Hank Hill that's down the street. He keeps sending me his mail.
So, yeah, Gavin P. Smith. I've always been fond of his Accelerators comic book. When I first heard how it was created, I used to listen to the podcast, you know, We Sell Comics, Mike and Ming from Comic Book Men. They had a podcast, and they actually... The process of creating that comic book was created on that podcast, or not created, but discussed on that podcast. And I loved listening to the story come about and you know, just go on from there. By the way, the baby crying. Oh, my gosh. Right when we first started, I asked him if it's okay to you got time to do the interview. You know, I always make sure there's time to do the interview. And then as soon as he goes, yeah, sure. And so I turn on the recorder, we get up there, and all of a sudden a baby starts crying. I'm like, what the hell? And there's a lady standing right behind me, like maybe 5 inches away behind me with a crying baby. I'm like, I gave her a look. Yeah, like, I'm trying to record here. And so she walks away. I mean, I understand crying babies. They cry. But, you know. So we're trying to record, and that's why you heard that. And then at the end, she comes back again and stands right there, and the baby, and it's like, come on. But anyway, so that wasn't Isaac crying. All right, so let's talk about the movie Sausage Party, Isaac. Let's see here. First of all, let me run down the cast of some of the voices.
They were the classic. Seth Rogen?
Yeah,
they were the classic Seth Rogen movie voices and actors.
Yeah, you got Michael Cera, you got James Franco, Bill Hader. Well, you got Selma Hayek in this. I love Teresa the Taco. You'll see, you've got Jonah Hill. Yeah, all right, you got Nick Kroll. He played the douche, and let's see, Edward Norton's in this one. Craig Robinson, you know, from Hot Tub Time Machine, The Office. He plays Grits. Tell them about the crackers. let's see. Seth Rogen, Paul Rudd, Kristen Wiig. Harlan Williams is in this. And the story was actually written by Seth Rogen, Jonah Hill, and Evan Goldberg. So you kind of know. It's one of those. All right, to be blunt, it's a stoner movie. You know somebody got stoned to create this. And you know that some stoner says, yeah, dude, that'll be funny. But... And you have to kind of be stoned to watch it and enjoy it. Not, you don't have to be, but I'm saying it would probably make it funnier. But it's just, it's funny. It's weird. There's lots of puns. It's full of food puns. But the storyline is that the foods...
I've also got to say, since it's an R-rated movie, they also get away with a lot more puns, like the cracker.
Yeah, there's a lot more than, yeah. But the story of it is that all the foods in the grocery stores... There, every morning, they wake up singing a praise to their gods, and the gods happen to be us, the consumers. And what it is they look good, we bring them home, take them to the promised land.
The great beyond.
And, well, the story, that sounds good to them, but once if they ever realize the dark horror that, yeah, they're going to be cut up and eaten by these gods in the great beyond, they wouldn't do this. Well, see, that's where this story happens, is that one... There's a cart, there's an accident, and the foods fall out, the douche gets wrinkled, or bent, and so...
Oh man, not my nose!
And so they gotta go, they don't get to meet the great beyond, and the douche takes it personally, and he's out now to get the wiener, and the bun that kept him from going to the great beyond. But also the myth is created because there was a time when they knew that they were being sacrificed to the god. They didn't want to look their best. And so the group of the food structures, whatever, not all foods either. I mean, after all, the main villain is a douche. So, I mean, no, Larry, a
it's
douche.
Just inanimate objects.
Yeah.
There's also the toilet paper.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to know what they do to me. But anyway, they're whatever things you find in the grocery store. And so basically they got one part of the story is a guy's trying to come back and tell them the truth of what happens out there. The other part of the story is that this wiener and this bun have to, the accident happened at a different part of the store. They're trying to get back to their original locations, and it's just complete mayhem. I loved the Stephen Hawking bubblegum. I'm like, God.
Every single time he introduces himself as the, like, chemical formula.
Yes.
His gum.
Xylitol. Yeah. So, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's the story is just... It's like, wow, there's some depth behind this. There's two different stories going on at the same time in the movie. And I don't know. Again, it's funny. It is hilarious. I will give it that 100%. There's a moment after the climax of the film. Again, pardon the pun there. But anyway, where there's... And Isaac said, I'm going to leave you to this section because apparently he got word of it about the movie.
Bless the internet for doing that.
Yeah, and so...
One time I'm happy to be spoiled on a movie.
He walked out for about 4 minutes during the film just before the final ending. And, oh my gosh, I will just tell you, it turns into a basic food orgy. And, wow, does it... I mean, I was even uncomfortable sitting there watching that. I'm like, my God.
It's not rated R just because of the language.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a movie you could take your kids to and be like, oh, they've heard this language before, it's nothing to them.
Yeah, no way, it's further... it's harmful to my mental health. But, yeah, either way, though, it was funny. I mean, I had a good time. I have a hard time recommending the film to anybody, though. It's like, you know, it's like, would you tell... I wouldn't have, you know, like... Well, for example, Deadpool. If somebody said, well, what do you think? I said, well, you gotta watch it. It's freaking great. But on this one, I would say, if you want to watch it, do it. It's funny.
If you're a fan of Seth Rogen films, then you'll watch it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You really gotta be a Seth Rogen fan to watch this one. So, I don't know. Let's hear from you, Isaac. What'd you think of it?
I just enjoyed most of the food puns, and I think Seth Rogen said this in an interview, but he wanted the characters to be, like, not just a throwaway movie. He wanted the characters to actually, like, make you feel for them, and I think he actually somewhat did that right.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I actually kind of enjoyed the characters, like the Michael Cera hot dog. He was pretty cool.
Yeah, the deformed
hot
dog, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're right. You did have some, I mean, the characters, they had something about them that you're like, oh, I want to see what happens. Does he get out of this? Or whatever, yeah. Yeah, you're right about that, but would you recommend it?
I mean, just like I said earlier, if you like Seth Rogen movies and the kinds of movies that he makes in general, then yeah, go see it. It's just an animated one of those, but with food instead, or with household objects instead of humans.
Yeah, yeah, true. So, all right. All right, well, that's Sausage Party. It's funny, and I'm not going to sit there and say, you got to go see it, because I can't really say that. But like, I guess you're right. If you like Seth Rogen movies, go see it. If you like food puns, go see it. If you just like kind of dumb humor, like maybe Yoga Hosers, yeah, you'd like this.
Yeah, it was definitely Yoga Hosers level humor. It was pretty dumb, but also funny.
Yeah. So, all right, well, that was Sausage Party. And let's see, I know, we're going to talk to Mike Flynn with Punch It Graphics. This is the guy that creates the movie posters, recreates movie posters, and travel posters based, he's got one, you know, travel to Endor, beware of the wildlife, and, you know, things like that. And he caught my eye towards the end of the interview. He did a Batman Killing Joke movie poster using Batman 66 characters. And it was, I regret not buying that print now when I think about it. But that caught my eye almost at the end of the interview, and I was like, that's funny.
What I've got to say is, in Batman 66, was there a Batgirl?
Yes, there was.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because if there wasn't, I think a better poster would have been a Death in the Family poster for Batman 66.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, either one of those would have worked, so. Yep. So we'll talk to Mike Flynn about that and come back, and we'll talk about another weird movie, but good weird. We'll talk about Swiss Army Man right after this. We get back from Mike Flynn. Guilty Wilson once again here at the Indiana Toy and Comic Expo in Bloomington. This time I'm talking with Mike Flynn with Punch It Graphics. Punch It Graphics, awesome name anyway.
Thank you.
Mike, you've got a unique take. You're basically doing, I don't know, kind of like movie poster ideas for these different movies and video games. What draws you to this? What makes you want to do this kind of an artwork?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'll tell you, the main thing I do is I try to do stuff that I enjoy myself personally. So I always do a lot of Star Wars stuff, a lot of video game stuff. And I've always had a like for the vintage type look of things. So
right.
The retro look. Going with pinups and travel posters, things of that nature. So I try to kind of mesh the two together into something that I would want to have hanging up in my own home. So
right. Well, I know we're looking over your shoulder. I see the one for Endor, Explore Endor. It's like a travel poster from, I don't know, maybe about the 50s, 60s maybe.
Yeah.
And it's kind of got that Mad Men feel about it. But it's like, hey, let's go to Endor. Let's see the Ewoks. Why not, you know?
Yeah.
And then the other thing, you got like, well, the Han Solo, the Rogue's Gambit.
It looks like the dime novels, the pulp,
yeah,
fiction,
like old,
pulp fiction,
like an old pulp novel. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and the way it's almost like a mashup between that style and modern nerdity. You know,
yes, yeah.
And I mean, it's really a unique. It grabs attention, definitely.
Thank
so,
you.
Do you have anything that's your favorite that you like to do that started you out all on this, or is it just anything in general?
Well, you know, Star Wars has always been my first love whenever it comes to, you know, my geekdom, I guess. You know?
Right, right.
So, I started doing the Star Wars ones first, and really the travel posters were some of the first ones that I did. So, and speaking of the indoor one at the bottom, it's even got a little disclaimer to beware of the native wildlife. So, you know, I want to make sure it puts some little details and things that people could buy it, take it home, look at it. And maybe a month from now, they look at it again and they realize there's something they missed on it. So I try to put some little details in there that makes it enjoyable for the future for them. Too.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. It's like, for example, you did the Blade Runner. Your own take on the movie poster.
Yes.
And you look at it, there's some little, you know, little clever things written within it. And it's a very simple design. And it's, again, it grabs the attention. But at the same time, like you said, you can go back and look at it again and again and maybe catch something later.
Yeah.
So. Now, there's a little story you have about the, we talked about this earlier, about the Blade Runner. Tell me about that one. That's an interesting story.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. The first show I had that at, Edward James Olmos was at it. And, you know, my wife is a huge fan of him. And we actually took a print over to him. And he took that print and he kept going on about how beautiful it was and how much he loved it, which was really a cool experience anyway. And he went ahead and wrote up a little autograph for me, which was really cool. And then later on the next day after he had left, his handler came over to our booth and he saw that poster and he said, "Wow, are you the guy who gave that to him?" And we said, "Yes." And he said that Edward James Olmos had taken him out to dinner that night and had been saying how much he loved that print and that he really liked it and he was going to take it home and hang it in his house. So I'm pretty proud to think that I actually maybe out there one of my prints is hanging in Edward James Olmos's bathroom or something.
Right.
But still, it's good.
Even
I'll take
if it,
it
is his bathroom. Yeah.
I'll take it. I'm good with it.
That is neat. And yeah, they are very eye-catching. And they're really, if you're a fan of whatever the show is, Blade Runner, I know a few people that are just diehard Blade Runner fans. They would just love to see the little details you're putting into this. Star Trek, Star Wars, you got little things. I mean, you're looking at Batman 66 poster that just, I don't know, it looks like, what it is, wait, that's the Killing Joke using Batman 60, oh my gosh.
Yes.
Now that's clever. I like that.
Yeah, thank you.
That's very good. Now,
yeah, that's another one with some little details in it because I've got the director being Roman Polanski.
Oh my God.
You know, so it's got to get just some things. Ooh. That, you know, people as they look at it, you know, maybe come to appreciate it over time as they have it, you know.
But you still have Holland Dozier. Well, so you got William Dozier in production. So, yeah. Adam West, Burt Ward, Batman the Killing Joke.
Yeah.
That's funny. Again, clever. It's great stuff. So,
thank you.
Well, how can people get a hold of you? What's the best way to look at your artwork and maybe even purchase some?
Yeah, best way to do it is, you can get a hold of me through Facebook at facebook.com/punchitgraphics, or I've also got my own website, which is punchitgraphics.com. And you can always message me through Facebook or through my shop as well.
All right, and also Instagram. Now, Instagram, you use that to display some of these, right? So that's Punch It Graphics on Instagram.
Yep, absolutely.
So definitely, Mike Flynn, great stuff. This is fun. Definitely a lot of fun to look at it. And I really enjoy seeing that you have Force Awakens posters out.
Yes.
Because, hey, they're going to keep going with it. You got to keep going with it.
That's for sure, man. Plenty of Star Wars to come.
Exactly. All right, so Mike Flynn, thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Gil. Appreciate it.
All right, so that was Mike Flynn. Like I said, that Killing Joke just at the last part of that interview grabbed my eye. I was like at the bottom of one of his on the display, and I was just looking from top down as we went through the interview, and that one grabbed me. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's cool. But anyway, Mike Flynn, check him out, punchitgraphics.com. All right, let's talk about Swiss Army Man. All right, Isaac, Daniel Radcliffe, Paul Dano, and well, first of all, let's talk about the actors and everything before we talk about the movie itself. Paul Dano, you may know him from Little Miss Sunshine or Looper. Daniel Radcliffe, everybody knows that's Harry Potter. And to coin a phrase that someone said at the end of this movie, in this movie, you get to see Harry Potter's Harry Pooter. the lady in the audience said that. So anyway, the movie is written and directed by Daniel Kwan and Dan Kwan and Daniel Scheinert.
It's Daniel Productions is what the movie, like, producer's name were.
Ah, okay, so they're both named Daniel. Yeah. But now these guys...
And they also picked Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, oh, I never thought of that. Huh, I didn't put him together with it. And Paul Dano. Oh, actually, Dano, so... but anyway, but these guys, you may know them most from Adult Swim shows, NTSF, SDSUV, and Children's Hospital. They direct and have written some of those episodes. And, I mean, that's pretty much... I was doing some research. That's pretty much all the... famous stuff they've done. They've done a whole bunch of little mini projects here and there, but this is their first major film that I know of, and it's very weird, but you got two characters that you're following throughout this movie, and it's really, those are the only two characters you ever care about at any time during the movie. Basically, Paul Dano, he's lost on a desert island, getting ready. I mean, he's been alone for, you can tell it's been a long period of time. He's got a big blonde beard. All his food is gone. It's a desert island. There's nothing growing on. I mean, there's grass and stuff, but it's, all it is a rock cave and no other real big wildlife, so he can't even get coconuts. He's about to kill himself, and right as he looks out, as he's about to kill himself, the body of Daniel Radcliffe washes up. Manny. He calls him Manny. He goes up and he goes, "Oh my gosh, someone, are you alive? Are you alive?" He goes running up to him. And I tell you what, I saw this line and I thought, wow, that's perfectly sums up this movie. The line was, "The first fart makes you laugh. The last fart makes you cry." And so basically it's what he does. He goes up to the dead body and he's like, "Are you alive? Are you alive?" He's checking for life and it's, no, he's dead. And as he starts to hear rumbling in the body, and as he moves lower and lower, eventually Daniel Radcliffe's body, or Manny's body, farts. And it's like, oh. So then he goes back. He's going to hang himself. He takes the belt, because he's going to use the belt to hang himself this time. And all of a sudden, Manny's body starts vibrating like crazy. And he's like, wait a minute. And then he goes and gets on Daniel Radcliffe's body, or Manny's body, and he gets in the ocean, and the farts are propelling him across the ocean. He pulls the pants down. He goes and rides him like a jet ski across the ocean and actually gets back to the mainland. Then their adventures getting back to the mainland begin. They're on the mainland. Getting back to civilization begin. So, that's the gist of the story. I read at Sundance Film Festival, a lot of people walked out of the theater because of the fart jokes. They thought it was immature humor. But like that line said that I read, the first fart makes you laugh, the last fart makes you cry. Really, that's a good way to summarize it, you know, because it does have those fart jokes. But that's the point of this movie, is that they go into a surreal, weird place. And
on the plus side of it, not just... It's not just like fart jokes to be fart jokes. It's because that's actually what the body does whenever it dies.
Right, right. And the thing is, they go to this place and it's like all of a sudden it becomes deep. You know, there's all this philosophy going on, talking about what happens when you die, what's life like if you don't take advantage of your situation and stuff like that. But then all of a sudden, oh, there's a fart joke. It brings you right back into the reality type thing. It's like, in other words, they go deep, but they say, hey, no, we're still just a movie, guys. So don't, you know, we're not going there. But I will say it was surreal. Basically, it's about missed opportunities. I think there was one summarization. I'll keep it as clean as I can for this podcast. But basically, everybody craps when they die. In fact, I love that everybody poops. He rewrites the Bible to where it's everybody poops so that he can explain it to Manny, the dead guy. But anyway, so basically, everybody craps when you die. Your crap just mixes with everybody else's dead crap, and it's all just the same crap. I thought that was a great summary of life in general based on this movie. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on, adventures. He discovers, basically, that the Manny's body has supernatural powers. He can project things out of his mouth. He can use him as a grappling hook launcher. He can use him to fly in the air and be saved out of the river and the ocean. Oh my gosh.
Because he doesn't have a working human brain.
Yeah. And it's amazing. Plus it's someone that he can talk to and work out his feelings. So, I don't know. It's very surreal, very, deep, but at the same time, very down to earth. And it's funny. I don't know about actual crying, but at the end of it, you're like, wow. You know, you're touched. You're emotional. You know, not. I wouldn't say full on crying. I've gone to movies where I've done a full on cry. Well, Schindler's List, for example. This was no Schindler's List, but I will say that, you know, this one at the end, you're like, oh yeah, that's nice. You know, it's an aw moment.
It's a dramedy.
Yeah. So that was I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was totally surprised. All I knew was I heard that Daniel Radcliffe plays a corpse, and I have to see what this is about. That's what my premise was going into the movie, and was thoroughly thrilled when I got done. Isaac, what'd you think? You didn't even know anything about it, did you?
Yeah, well, I knew that. That's because of all you kept saying was, oh, Daniel Radcliffe's a corpse in this movie. That's why I want to see it. And that's the only reason he gave to me, so I that's all I knew, too. But movies like the indie movies like this, I have to say, I usually end up enjoying more because you don't really see trailers for them. So right. You don't know any of the story, basically. Mm-hmm. You just know the actors if you, like, read the... You just know the title and the actors and maybe what it's about if you read the movie list.
Right.
But, this movie was really enjoyable, and it's like Kevin Smith's Yoga Hosers, where I left and I'm like, I don't know what I just saw, but I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Except this one, I think I actually enjoyed it in a different way, rather than just being entertained. I was also entertained and touched.
Yeah.
Because it was nice.
Well, I think, actually, your comment after this one was, I don't know what I just saw, but it was awesome.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good summarization, because you're right. It's like, wow, that's weird, but God, that was so awesome. You're right. That was a great way to put that, really, without giving away spoilers. But yeah, that's the thing. It was a very surreal, very interesting, and I would go see movies by these guys again. You know, the Daniel Productions, Daniel Pictures, I would go see something by them again. In a heartbeat, because I know that was a good quality product came out of there. Would you?
Yeah, I'd probably see more of them.
It actually made me like Daniel Radcliffe a little more, too.
I think Daniel Radcliffe's probably just a cool guy in general. It's just everybody assumes he's, like, nice because of Harry Potter, and he doesn't... Because Harry Potter wasn't, like, freaking fart humor.
Right, right, yeah.
But I think this movie showcased what his humor actually is.
I think, at least... It showed him in a different light, anyway, you know. So, yeah. I mean, I've come to appreciate him. I'm going to look for some more Daniel Radcliffe movies now. So, all right. Well, that was Swiss Army Man. I got to say, high praise out to the Eagle Theater. That's who Isaac and I, typically, that's where we get our movies from. We go to the Eagle Theater here in Robinson. EagleTheater.net is their website. They own the Clintonia Eagle in Clinton, Illinois. So, the Eagle Theater here in Robinson, Illinois. And it's a big city theater experience in a small town. They've got 3D movies, they got 2D movies, everything else you'd expect from a big city theater. And the thing that even makes it a little bit better, here comes the small town aspect, free refills on popcorn, free refills on soda. You can mix, add flavor bursts, you can add flavors to your popcorn. They've got different types of seasonings for your popcorn. Friendly staff. And I just got to give them high praise. Plus, once a year, they do this independent film festival. This is the second year we've gone. Is this the second year they've done it?
I think this is the second year they've done it, because I didn't really hear about anything like this before we went to see the movies, like the one with Mark Ruffalo and whatnot.
Yeah, and Gamora.
Yeah.
Yeah, last year. So last year we went and saw it. This is the only one that really got my attention at during the independent film festival this year. The others, if I would have seen them, maybe it would have been a different story, but this one just grabbed my attention. But
I think in library form, we have the chance to go see one.
Oh, nice. So. That'll be good, because that way you get another one under your belt. But, this definitely, we got to send some thanks out to those guys. If you're in the area, or if you want to come to a small town experience for a big theater, check it out, eagletheater.net. Let them know we sent you, because, you know. Got to let them know that we sent you. Those guys are nice and they're super cool. And where else in a small town are they going to do an independent film festival? A few other things they do during the summers. Last year they did movies you have to see on the big screen and like Jaws, E.T., Close Encounters, things like that. Classic. They also do free movies for kids during the summer. It's amazing what those guys do for the community. So, but yeah, bringing independent film to a small community, they do it, and they bring some good ones like Swiss Army Man. All right, so let's talk now to Jake Lee. Jake Lee Art, he does a lot of, silkscreen printing, and he's created an artwork. It's amazing the things that he's come up with. I regret now not buying the Norman Osborn print that he had. I look at that now. He did a print of villains from Marvel related to the Seven Deadly Sins. Galactus was Gluttony, etc. He did one with Norman Osborn. I kind of regret that now, because who does not like Norman Osborn's hair in the comic books?
I don't know what that looks like. I can every time you say Norman Osborn, all I think is Willem Dafoe.
No, you need to look at an old Jack Kirby drawing of Norman Osborn or An old drawing of Norman Osborn from the comics. Trust me.
If I read any old comics, I'll make sure to voice him with Willem Dafoe's voice.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. But anyway, so yeah, JakeLeeArt.com. We're going to talk with Jake and find out what makes him tick. And then we'll come back. We'll close things out. And we'll talk with Ron Brown. And who knows whatever else we can come up with.
Guilty Wilson with the Nerd Up Podcast once again. This time I'm talking with Jake Lee here at the Indiana Toy and Comic Expo. Now, Jake has got... Now, we're going to talk about this, but he's got some political artwork, if you ask me, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. But what grabbed my attention, he's got these old He-Man figure prints from the action figure, a photo, and I don't know, we'll talk about that here in a second. So, Jake Lee, welcome to the Nerd Up Podcast, for starters.
Thanks, man.
Now, Jake, you've got this unique, I guess it's a silkscreen process artwork.
Correct.
Tell us a story about what you do, how you do it, and maybe even throw in why you do it.
All right. Well, I was an illustrator when I first started, and I used to do a lot of drawings. I tried to get into comic books and whatnot. But then I got into printmaking, so my entire process is layered silkscreens. Okay. The original stuff is usually on wood panel, but I started doing these He-Mans on just paper. It's two layers. I just wanted something a little different than what you would see at a convention at times.
Right. Definitely so.
Yeah, most definitely. But what I did was I grabbed some of the toys I found, took some photographs of them, and then the backgrounds are old billboards.
Okay.
So it's chopped up billboards together. So then we compose it digitally in Photoshop, and then we will burn it on silk screens and press it on paper or wood panels.
Nice. I mean, it's very unique style. I mean, it definitely stands out. Now, well, that brings me to, like I said, political,
yes.
Maybe.
Yeah, you, sometimes.
Yeah, you did a couple of, basically villains.
Yes.
That's the villains of Marvel villains, but they were more political oriented. What? Tell me about those.
That series was done about 3 years ago. It's called Vulnerable Villains. I took 7 old school Marvel villains and that would relate to basically the 7 deadly sins.
Okay.
And then basically adding kind of a sarcastic commentary, political and social values would be the best way into the background. So, for instance, let's do Galactus.
Okay.
Galactus is gluttony.
Okay.
He eats planets.
Right.
He wants more and more. So, with today's society and media, how we want more and more, we're never fulfilled, relates to Galactus.
Right. Oh, it makes sense now.
So, So there's a whole story with each and every single one, but it was one of my favorites. It was those consisted of like almost 20 silk screens on 5x5 wood panels.
Wow, that's a lot of work.
It is. It is. All 7 of them took me about 6 months.
Wow. And then you've got them now as on print form that people can
print,
take a look,
and small reproductive canvases.
Oh yeah. Okay. Now, I like the canvases. Those really stand out. Okay, anyway. But, why don't you sell them on the board? I mean, how big do you say they were?
The originals are 5x5s.
Okay,
so. It's hard to carry them around. Usually, I've sold half of them, which has been great.
Yeah.
The other half are in my studio, and if anyone ever wants to check them out, they can go to my website, JakeLeeArt.com, and shoot me an email. But I mostly with the wood panels and stuff. The nice part is some of the original work is already sold. All the stuff behind me sold. So
nice.
I just make reproductions so other people can enjoy it.
Right, and that's the best thing about coming to like a convention like this is people have their original artwork, beautiful stuff. Well, like maybe a painting, maybe that 5x5 wood piece.
Yeah.
How much would that go for?
$1,200.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. At a comic convention, people don't really have that money.
Yeah.
But the print
for $20.
$20, nice. And those look good. I mean, I've got prints all over my house from various artists all over the world, and so yeah, I love to have the prints. So
yeah.
Where am I going to hang a big 5x5s?
Yeah. I'm still thinking that too with mine. Like, I have 3 of them in my studio, and I don't know where to put them.
So even the artist has problems. Good. I like to hear that.
Lots of problems.
Now, through the process here of the silk screening, you said you started out as an illustrator, is that right?
And then
you got into silk screening, and it kind of combined the two arts?
Yep, and I got, I was an illustrator, and then by day I'm a graphic designer, so I did a lot of graphic design work, but got into printmaking, and just got into silk screening, that repetition of just having one image and making it repeat so much.
Right.
It just creates this energy I really personally like, and so like, doing these prints, I can do them as many as I want.
And yeah, and you know what? They actually come out with that energy. That energy stands out from them. I mean, these are just action figures with a background, like you said, of billboards that are kind of collaged in, if you will. But they actually look like they're moving. I mean, it's hard to describe this on an audio podcast, but you have to take a look at these.
It's very poppy.
I mean, like I'm looking at the Linda Carter on canvas you have back here. Yeah. Beautiful Linda Carter, and the background just to me that would be the centerpiece of my house, because I mean that just stands out and it grabs your attention.
Thank you so much. And I mean, having Linda Carter in your house, you can't beat.
I definitely love that. Oh, you mean the canvas? Yeah. So once again, Jake Lee, JakeLeeArt.com. Now, if you really want to see, now you used to have pictures of your work on your Instagram account?
Everywhere, yeah.
All right, so Jake_Lee_art on Instagram. Check him out. I'm telling you, this guy's got some fun stuff. You might want to, you probably end up buying all of it, but like I might have to do. So. But Jake, thanks again for joining us on the podcast.
Appreciate it.
All right, so JakeLeeArt.com. Go check it out. This guy's got some fun stuff. And I mean, really. And I love the aspect that he can create political details in a comic book using the comic book villains. I mean, it's amazing. But anyway, so that was we got one more artist to talk to with the Indiana Toy and Comic Expo that we got to enjoy this time. Isaac, Indiana Toy and Comic Expo. We actually made it a weekend. The night before, we went and saw Ace Frehley in concert in Indianapolis, which was a loud concert and a great concert too. And then we went to the Toy and Comic Expo that Sunday morning. And made our way home after that. Toy and Comic Expo, I know you found a couple of Symbiote action figures that you'd been looking for a long time. Because when I know they didn't carry them in Walmart very long at all. And then I also picked up a few art prints from here and there. And I picked up the latest Gavin Smith comic trade paperback, The Accelerators. Anything you got to say about... Well, let me first say... Billy Cooper at Indiana Toy and Comic Expo, once again, another great year. Great stuff going on. I love the custom Reggie action figures. They auctioned those off. I didn't get on the auction because I knew they'd go for way too high. It was for a charity, but there were some really cool ones. But Billy Cooper does a great event every year. I'm glad this is the third one. Can't wait for the fourth one. Isaac, anything you got to say about the Indiana Toy and Comic Expo?
I mean, it was really nice as usual, but the only... I guess there was, like, less that I could find that I wanted this year.
You actually had specific items in mind this time around. Last year, it was like, well, something related to.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this, yeah. So, yeah. But, well, maybe next year they'll have more. And that's funny, because you're more on the toy side of the things there and I'm more on the artist or comic side of it. So, you and I make a great team going to this thing. So, we'll go back next year. And then maybe this time they'll have JoJo's Bizarre Adventure action figures. All right, so let's talk with Ron Brown, the creator of the platypus. I'm telling you, this platypus is so cool. He can talk, and he's got amnesia. So we'll talk with Ron Brown, and come back and close out the podcast.
Guilty Wilson with the Nerd Up Podcast, still at the Indiana Toy and Comic Expo, still having a blast, still coming up with some great artists and authors and everything else. This time I'm with Ron Brown. Now, if you're going to look him up, it's Braun, but it's pronounced Brown. We made sure of that. He's a cartoonist and illustrator. He's got a series called Once Upon a Platypus. You were at Indie PopCon a couple years ago, and I remember seeing this. Never got a chance to talk to you then. I'm so glad I got to talk to you this time, because I do remember this. In fact, I think a friend of mine bought one of these and showed it to me, and then I got sidetracked. But anyway, Ron Brown, thanks for joining the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
The Once Upon a Platypus. This is it looks like a children's story?
It's all ages. It's not specifically for children. It's something I'm enjoying. So that's the approach that I take on it.
Okay.
It is for all ages, but yeah, not specifically for kids.
Yeah. Now, it looks like a fun, quirky story, but at the same time, you've got some little aspects of it that everybody's going to love. Now, tell me the story behind Once Upon a Platypus. Tell me what readers can expect out of this.
Okay, well, it's a science fiction fantasy story. It's all ages, like we mentioned. It's about a girl that finds a talking platypus with amnesia.
Nice.
And she gets drawn into an epic adventure that will lead to who knows where. We're not there yet, so I can't divulge any information. But
no spoilers?
No spoilers.
Talking platypus with amnesia. Right there, you got me hooked. You got me going on. How many issues do you have of this comic book out, and what all are the storylines within each issue?
I've got two main issues so far, and then my next step from that is going to be a graphic novel series. So it'll be a three-part graphic novel series. The first one introduces the main characters, and the second one just takes it a little bit further leading into the graphic novel series.
Started out in a book called Hello Cruel World. That's where you got. Yes. That's where this platypus started out with. What happened there?
That's a story about a cartoonist that refuses to sell his soul to the devil, and his life starts to go to crap. It involves vampires, zombies, all kinds of stuff like that. And the platypus ends up, I don't want to give it, I don't want to divulge any information there either, even though it's a finished story.
Right, you got to read it.
Yes, and the story kind of plays itself out in there with the platypus, and there was such interest in that character that I wanted to give it some more, just flesh it out and make it more epic.
Started out just a little section in a book that you were doing, and then all of a sudden you developed a comic book out of it, and now you've gone even further. I'm seeing these other characters like Harry Potipus. I mean, come on, we know that's Harry Potter, but it's a platypus, a space platypus. You got space ghosts going. I mean, you've got a whole bunch of different ideas. I mean, looking at just several, what gave you the idea to branch out into that aspect of it?
Actually, that started before I actually did the book. I was just kind of playing around. In fact, when I go back to the Hello Cruel World, I did a Indiana Jones version of him. Platypus Jones is what it was called.
Okay.
And just as I was starting to consider going to shows and stuff, I thought, well, I want some prints to sell.
Right.
And I figured it led its way into, you know, since he's a platypus with amnesia, that he could be imagining he's these different characters. You know, this could be me. So just kind of branched out from there. So it's kind of my concentration is on the book, but it's just something fun to do.
Definitely. And they definitely look fun. I mean, you've got Iron Fist, you've got Luke Cage here. I mean, and you got the old school Luke Cage. That's what
I
really
that's
like.
That's right.
With the bracers and the headband.
That's right.
So you got, I mean, it is a lot of fun. Even Black Bolt. So definitely, it's something fun to do while you're getting this out. I think actually, Tim, I can remember now, at the first Indie PopCon, Tim Mattson bought one of your, he's also one of the co-hosts on the podcast,
Okay. And
he bought one of these. He goes, Gil, you got to see, this is one of the most charming books I've ever read.
Oh,
and I'm like,
that.
And when he uses the word charming, that's something. Tim is one of the guys that, let's just say he usually hates everything.
He's like Mikey, huh?
Yeah, there we go, exactly. But he always tells why he hates it, though. But he told me, he goes, I remember him saying that one of the most charming books ever. And so I got to look at it, but by the time we got to think about coming back around, didn't make it. But now I have. And once again, you can check out.
Check me out. Yeah. My website's TuneItUp, TuneItUp.
And you're also on Facebook,
I'm on
Twitter.
Facebook.
And
TuneItUp Art at Facebook and TuneItUp on Twitter.
And TuneItUp would be TOON, in case you nerds out there don't realize it's a cartoon tune. So tune-it-up.com is the website. Now, you're going to see samples of some of the artwork here and everything?
Yep.
All right, so Ron Brown with Tune It Up. The platypus grabs your attention.
I'll get a Once Upon a Platypus website, too. I'm not there yet.
But it's on the website, so that's all that matters. Now, let's move on to some of the other projects you have going here.
Okay.
I'm looking at, we talked about Hello Cruel World, which kind of got the start of the platypus. What else you got going on here?
I kind of wanted to put to bed all my old projects before I started Once Upon a Platypus. So I started with my most current, which was the comic strip Tune It Up. Which is about several instruments and just musical gear.
So now we know
music.
The origin. Okay,
that's the origin of it. So I compiled that, and then I moved on to my Hello Cruel World, which was my next comic strip before that. And that's a supernatural story about the cartoonist with the not selling a soul and life going awry. Then I moved to my comics, two comic strips that came before that, both starring Rob and Ron, which is me and a friend of mine.
Okay.
And put that into a book called My Best Friend is an Idiot. And then just this year, I moved back a little farther into a collection of gag cartoons that I put out when I first started trying to send stuff out and get going with my career. And then I also trying to think, what else could I do? I actually put together a book of my high school newspaper cartoons.
Oh my gosh. So, wow. A long time ago in a high school not so far away.
That's right. Yeah, and that pretty much compiled everything that I'd done prior to. I'm working on an odd project now that'll probably come out next year, which is a comic that I penciled and wrote the story for when I was 14 years old. And now I'm going to be 54 next year. And so 40 years later, I'm finishing it up. I'm inking it and putting it into a comic book format. And
finally.
It's about time, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, wow, that's a long way. Well, how does a cartoon strip artist, creator, move from there to a comic book? Was it that hard of a move, or is it just...
It was for me.
Okay.
Because I was so set in the four panel, or, you know, the very small panel.
Right.
And having it end in a gag,
right.
That it was really a struggle to go to comic book. I finally did it, but it took a while. It took some, and now I don't know if I can go back.
Now you're stuck in the comic world. No. Okay, well, that's a good thing. I kind of like that idea. But then again, I haven't read one of your comic strip books yet. So, all right, we'll see what happens here. All right, so once again, Ron Brown, you can catch him on tuneitup.com. It's tune-it-up. .com and also on Instagram, Twitter, all those other fun things. Ron, thanks for joining us, and holy cow, this is some neat stuff.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Well, that does it for the Nerd Up podcast this time around. It's Nerd Up 101. Now you know the basics, the beginning class. I'm Gil T. Wilson. You can reach me on Twitter at Gil Wilson.
I'm Isaac Wilson. You can reach me on YouTube, youtube.com/user/PikachuLover88. And that's pretty much where you can reach me. That's where I'm most at.
So. All right. Yeah, and if you want, on the nerduppodcast.com website, we feature some of Isaac's videos. So you can check those out and see how weird this kid gets. But in the meantime, let's see here. Don't forget, purchase the t-shirts, make donations, purchase something from Amazon or iTunes using our website, and give us a little kickback to help support the podcast, if you will. We always appreciate it, and we always need it. Basically, we just want to cover storage fees for the audio. What I'm wanting is to be able to carry every single episode so you can go back to even episode number one and see the growth of the podcast. So that's why I want more and more for the storage space rental. In the meantime, let's go and finish and see what we can do for episode number 102. As we say each and every time, stay nerdy.